Ian, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm great, man. Thanks for joining. Welcome to Quality at Bats Academy. We have Ian Parmalee on the line. He's an outfielder, Major League Baseball player for the Blue Jays. Ian, can you kind of talk to us a little bit about the beginning parts of your baseball career? I mean, I know you were drafted in the seventh round by the Blue Jays. You went to Monroe High School. You played at Bellevue College, transferred to Liberty University over in Virginia. Can you kind of talk to us about the beginning? How did you get started playing baseball? Did you play Little League baseball? Did you play travel baseball?
I really started way back in T-ball. I think when I was 5 years old,
Okay.
that's when I first started falling in love with the game. And then just coming up through the years, and then I started playing travel ball. I think around 13, played there all the way through 18. And then, I mean, I was pretty undersized coming out of high school, so not a whole lot of offers. So then I ended up going to local junior college, and from there, not a whole lot of offers from there. Just a couple of D1, and so I went to a small D1 over on the East Coast, Liberty University. And I really didn't know if I was going to be continuing my career after that until I was actually driving home from Liberty in Virginia to Seattle. And I think I was right about in Montana, and I got a call from a Blue Jay scout. So that was basically my path to pro ball.
Right. And growing up, were you really just focused mostly on baseball? Did you play other sports?
I played a little bit of soccer until I was 11, but ever
Okay.
since then it's been baseball.
Right. So going into college, you pretty much were just focused 100% on baseball.
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
definitely.
So did you play ball all year round growing up, or was it just more of a seasonal thing for you?
It was more of a seasonal thing.
Right.
I would play high school ball, then summer ball, and then a couple years of fall ball, and then just, I mean, up here in the winter, it's kind of hard to
Right,
get out
yeah.
there and play ball, so it's mostly just indoor work through the whole winter,
Right,
and
yeah.
then repeat.
Right, that's kind of one of the common questions that we get over in QAB is, how much time does a player need off or away from the game to kind of recover from the season? Or, sometimes you hear people say you need to be playing year round because baseball is getting more competitive every year. And I think there's obviously benefits to both. There's pros and cons. When did you start lifting weights? Was some sort of weightlifting or training regimen part of your development, or was that something that you started to do actually later in your career?
I first started lifting a little bit in high school,
Right.
and then when I went to Bellevue College, that's when it really got serious. I mean, our head coach had our whole workout schedule set up, all our workouts, what our weights should be, and everything. And right then is when I realized how important it is for this game.
Yeah. When did you know that you were good enough to play pro ball?
I'd probably say when my first year at Liberty University, that was when, I mean, looking around, seeing guys that are getting drafted and stuff, thinking, hey, I'm better than that guy.
Right,
And
right.
then my senior year comes along, and during the pro day, just talking with a bunch of scouts, I mean, I had a feeling that I might get an opportunity, but I wasn't really sure until draft day. So
Right.
that's when I knew that I got the opportunity to continue my career.
Right. So it wasn't really until, your junior or senior year that you actually started to kind of be able to tell yourself, hey, I might actually have a shot at playing at the highest level, because I'm comparing myself to these other guys who are getting a shot, and I'm really no different. Was playing in the big leagues a dream, a childhood dream, or was that really something that you really weren't thinking about until later?
Was my dream since I was 5 years old. When I
Right.
first started playing baseball,
Right.
that's when I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, that was one of the greatest experiences of my life. It was incredible.
What was draft day like for you when you got that call? What did you do? What was the feeling like? Can you kind of break that down for us?
It was relief, I guess. I mean, I had just gotten home from driving 3,000 miles. I think it was the next day or 2 days later. I'm just sitting at home and then just watching the draft, and then I get a call saying it's looking like we might take you with our next pick. I'm like, That's when I finally just
Right.
felt relief
Yeah, I
to
mean,
get the opportunity to continue my career.
yeah, you know, when we talk about getting drafted, especially for the guys who aren't the top round, where they're not really sure what's going to happen, what's in store for them for the next couple of days, excitement and stress and anxiety are some of the common emotions that a lot of these players have, and I can definitely sympathize with that. So you got drafted. You start your professional baseball career. Now, what does a typical day look like for you? Let's say off season. What is it that you do to kind of stay in shape?
This time of year, go head to the gym probably 5 days a week, just working on my cardio and then trying to get strength back that I lost throughout the year. And this year, my body's a little banged up, so been working on rehabbing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll probably start hitting here in another month or so, give my body a little bit longer to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably come the new year, start throwing outside, weather permitting, of course, start everything over again.
Right. And then during the season, I mean, I know it's, you know, part of the challenge of playing professional baseball is that you're essentially playing on a daily basis, staying sharp, keeping that strength that you gained, keeping as much of the strength as you possibly can that you gain during the off season, I'm sure is a challenge. What are some things that you do during the season to kind of stay sharp?
With the Blue Jays, I mean, we got some of the best strength coaches around. I mean, throughout the year, I mean, even if we're on the road, our strength coaches are taking us to the local gym. So we can easily get in workouts 4 days a week, usually keeping it light just so we're not overdoing it,
right?
But just trying to keep all our strength up, our cardio up, not letting our body break down. And then our athletic trainers are second to none. They're the ones that are keeping us on the field, keeping us ready, keeping us sharp. So
right.
It's like our staff with the Jays right now is incredible.
You guys do a lot of compound stuff though, like deadlifts or cleans or any sort of explosive movements.
We do some deadlifts, during the season, not too heavy.
Right.
But, a lot of kettlebell work. And then with our new, high performance program that, they've implemented the last couple of years, our nutrition has become a huge, huge, factor
right.
in our recovery and everything, keeping us ready.
Right. Yeah. You know, a lot of times when we have a parent that wants to talk about tips, tricks, and strategies for getting bigger, faster, and stronger, we always talk about just having the foundations in place, you know, making sure you're staying hydrated, making sure you're getting your sleep, your rest, and then certain foods, you know, that you can avoid, like, you know, high glycemic foods, obviously sugar. Is there anything that the Blue Jays organization encourages in terms of food? Is there any types of foods that the organization encourages you guys to avoid?
Mostly sugars.
Right, yeah.
Stuff like that. I mean, yeah. They've revamped our entire menu, even spring training and during the season.
Uh-huh.
So everything's a lot healthier, a lot of smoothies,
right.
stuff like that, and
right.
very rarely will we find sugars in our diet.
Right, yeah, and that's something that was never really thought about. It wasn't a popular idea in terms of avoiding sugar when we were young. I mean, I don't know about you, but I grew up drinking Gatorade and Powerade and just thinking about all the amount of sugar that I was putting in my body. You know, I wonder what impact that had.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I loved my sugar.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
I have a sweet tooth, too. The hitting approach. So, obviously, you've worked with Spring while with the Blue Jays. I'm assuming that the mental side has been an important part of your game. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about what your approach to hitting looks like? Do you do anything that's unusual? Anything that maybe other people might think is kind of not necessarily unorthodox, but that's interesting?
When I first started my career in pro ball, I was really focusing on working the counts deep, like seeing a lot of pitches, working the counts deep,
okay,
and like trying to get on base however possibly I can. And that led me to lead the league in walks that year, but it also had me hit 200
right.
and repeated a year of short season. So after that year, I kind of decided, yeah, this approach isn't going to work for me. I mean, I need to start being a little more aggressive at the plate and try to start driving the ball instead of just worrying about trying to get on base. Right. And once that happened, that's when my career started taking a turn. I started hitting a lot better, getting on base even more than I was, actually, and driving in more runs, hitting for a little more pop. And that's when I really figured out what my approach was going to be. I mean, I'm still a guy that needs to get on base, but also a guy that can drive in a run if he has to.
Right. So when you say making the adjustment to being a little bit more aggressive, are we talking about being selectively aggressive? What type of hitter were you? Were you more of like a leadoff guy? Were you a specialty guy? Did you hit kind of in the middle of the order?
I mean, throughout my whole career, I was more of a slap guy, slap the other way, okay, leadoff or bottom of the order type guy.
Right.
Once I made the adjustment to hunt the fastball a little bit more,
right,
look for something out over and try to drive it in the gap, that's when everything started falling into place for me a little bit.
How hard was it for you to make that adjustment to kind of being the hitter who was a little bit more selective, being a hitter that was much more aggressive? I mean, was there a learning curve there, or was it just a matter of, you know, saying, okay, I'm going to walk up to the plate and be selectively aggressive. I know what pitch I'm looking for, and when I get it, I'm not going to miss.
Yeah, definitely. After that first year, I mean, I realized that I wasn't going to walk myself to the big leagues.
Right.
So after that, I mean, especially as you progress each level in the minor leagues and so on, pitchers get better and better, and sometimes that first pitch is really the only good pitch you're going to see, so you got to be ready to hit it if it's there for you.
Now that you've kind of transitioned from being the, you know, a little bit more selective hitter to a hitter that's more aggressive, was there anything else that you did different? When did you start to feel really good about your swing? When did you feel comfortable in the box? That moment when you felt like you had things figured out, was it essentially that year when you made that adjustment, or was there other things that had to come into place in order for you to feel that way?
Yeah, I probably didn't start feeling comfortable with my approach until probably 2015 in Double-A.
Okay.
That's when, I mean, working with our hitting coach there, Stubby Clapp, who's right now, I think, the Triple-A Manager of the Year for Memphis.
Okay.
Working with him, just working on the approach, I mean, that's when everything started kind of clicking for me. Because, I mean, for the first couple years of my career, I think 12, 13, 14, I didn't get a whole lot of at-bats throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
So each of those years, it's kind of hard to take that next step with my approach and get comfortable with it to where I can take that approach to the plate every at-bat. And then finally, in, I think it was 2015, I started getting a little more at-bats and get a little more comfortable at the plate, and that's when I could really start trusting
right
the process and everything I was doing at the plate.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about your process and preparation. Where does the actual preparation start for you when you're getting ready for a game, getting ready to face a specific pitcher, and getting ready to prepare for an at-bat? When would you say the process and the preparation actually starts for you?
I would say probably the night before. I mean, right when you know who you're going to be facing that next day, that's when you start thinking about, okay, this is what I'm going to have to do tomorrow morning. Maybe get some video on the guy, see what he has, see how he might attack me, and then get to the park, get the body right, go out there, get moving around a little bit, and then everything, once the game starts, I mean, that's when all your preparation comes into play, and then you just go out there and compete and help your team win.
For me, growing up, or specifically while playing college baseball, I was huge on pregame routines, making sure that, you know, I wasn't necessarily superstitious, but I had a set of things that I made sure that I did every single day. And I didn't take it overboard. I didn't have any superstitions. Like, you know, you hear David Eckstein, you know, he would eat pancakes and teriyaki chicken before every game. Or,
yeah,
you know, Wade Boggs would eat fried chicken before every game. Did you have any, not necessarily superstitions, or I guess you could call them rituals, but things that you did to kind of help you feel like you were being consistent? Because, I mean, as you know, there's so many things about the game. Obviously, this game, it's a game of failure. There's so many things that are beyond your control at least having something that's within your control, whether it's what you eat before a game, maybe the music that you listen to before a game. Did you have any sort of unique pregame rituals that you did?
Not really. I would probably say, I mean, for a 7-5 game, for me personally, I didn't really like having a big meal before the game. So I
Okay.
usually have, like a couple, like maybe protein bar, stuff like that. And then maybe like a pre-workout drink just to get the mind going a little more. And then usually around 6 o'clock, probably go take a shower real quick. Then 6:30, start my foam roll routine. And
Okay.
then be out there 20 minutes before the game, get out there, run, stretch, throw, and then back in the dugout for the anthem.
Right. Okay. So the foam roller, are you trying to do with the foam roller? Is it something that you do just to kind of iron out any knots, or does it help you get loose, or specifically, what are you trying to
Yeah,
iron out?
it helps me get loose,
Yeah.
and it's what I mean. I've always done that, so I mean, I feel like that gets my body going a little bit more,
Right.
and just the time where I can just relax and then just get my mind focused.
Yeah. Okay, so you're at the ballpark. You already know who's pitching. You've taken BP. It's your first at bat. What's going on? What's going through your head? Is there anything that you're saying to yourself? Is there any mental chatter? Are there any checklists that you're trying to check off before that walk to the plate for your first at bat?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm going up there every time just hunting the fastball. I
Okay.
mean, that's going up there looking for something out over, something I can drive early in the count. And then if two strikes comes around, I'm doing everything I can to get the ball in play and get on base and hopefully help my team win that day.
Right. Yeah. So, Spring talks about how, one of the stupidest questions is it easier to hit one pitch when you know it's coming or three when you don't?
Yeah.
He also talks about the importance of hunting pitches, watching the pitcher. The pitcher is the test. Is hunting pitches something that you always do, or I know that you mentioned earlier that one of your approaches used to be just take until you get a strike or trying to get deeper in the count. Now it's where now you're at the point where you're being much more aggressive, especially early in the account. Do you ever hunt off-speed pitches? And if you do hunt off-speed pitches, what has to be in place for you to have that approach?
The only time I'd probably hunt off-speed pitches is if I know the pitcher pretty well and I know how he's probably might attack me.
Right.
And that's usually, I mean, there's a couple instances this year where that came into play. But other than that, I'm trying to be on time for the fastball.
Right. Okay. You have your approach. You're feeling good at the plate. Is there anything else specific that you're trying to do? Are you telling yourself to stay inside the baseball, or are you just trying to keep it simple, trying to drive the ball up the middle? Is there anything else that you're kind of telling yourself? Is there like a swing thought or any sort of mental chatter while you're in the actual box?
Yeah, at this point in my career, I'm more going with the flow. I mean,
Yeah.
I don't really have to tell myself what my approach is anymore. I mean, actually, a couple of years ago, Spring told me something really good, and earlier in the count, try to hit a line drive right over the shortstop into the gap. A little later in the count, maybe something a little deeper, maybe the sixth hole, maybe left field, just to help me stay back on the ball and not get beat.
Right,
So
right,
that
right.
when he told me that and to visualize that at the play, that's when, I mean, things really started clicking for me.
Is there anything that you do when you kind of get away from this feeling, or you get away from the approach? Maybe you're thinking a little bit too much about the things that you can control, because this game is full of distractions, and it's, again, like what Spring says, the biggest self-esteem destroying sport in the world. And it's really easy. There's something about going 0 for 4 that kind of makes you lose your memory. That's what we say a lot at QAB. Is there anything that you do to kind of get yourself back on track, to make sure that you have that same mental approach that got you to where you were?
Usually, I mean, for me personally, I mean, I've been through a lot in my career so far. So going 0 for 4 isn't the worst thing in the world. I mean, there's been times in my career where I had maybe a little over 100 at bats in a season in 5 months. So I mean, going 0 for 4, going a little slump, I mean, that's definitely not the worst thing that can happen.
Right.
So going up there, find myself in a little slump. I mean, I just tell myself that, hey, things can be a lot worse. And then, because for me personally, I'm more of a timing hitter, rhythm hitter. So I know next day I can just go in the cage, work on that, get everything back in order, talk to my hitting coaches, get some video maybe. Right. But I really don't like thinking too much about it, because once that happens, everything starts snowballing.
That's true.
So you just try to keep it out of your mind.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's, again, trying, that's, I guess you could say that's one of the catch-22s of having a specific approach, is trying not to overthink it, you know, and try to keep things as simple as you can, because you got a lot of things going on. Let's backtrack a little bit. We talked about your approach. I'm not sure if we talked about this, but when you got that call up to the major leagues, can you kind of walk us through what that was like? Who was the first person you contacted? What was that feeling like?
Oh, it was incredible. I mean, we were in Syracuse, New York at the time,
mm-hmm.
and I'm playing right field during the game. I think it was the second or third inning. I come in from the field, and I hear my manager tell one of our players that he's going to right field. I'm sitting there. I'm like, wait, I'm playing right field. So then he's like, hey, I need to talk to you. Takes me down to the tunnel. Tells me I'm going up. I mean, I'm speechless. I mean, I can't keep the smile off my face. Go back to the dugout. Give guys a bunch of hugs. Head inside. Call my parents right away. Mm-hmm. I mean, tell them what's happening. I mean, I hear my mom kind of choking up on the other on the end of the line.
Oh wow!
I'm trying to keep it together, and I mean, the next day, hopped on a flight in the morning to Kansas City, and I was starting in right field that night.
That's amazing. Who was the first pitcher you faced?
It was Junis for the Royals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Do you have any favorite hitting drills that you do to, before a game or after a game or during the off season, to keep your swing sharp or to kind of refine that approach?
Not really specific drills. I mean, I like getting my T-work in first, get everything, try to get my body in sync. Then from there, either during the season, I like to just get 3 rounds of front flips.
Mm-hmm.
And just to get my vision going, get my timing and rhythm going. And then after that, I would just go out and get ready for the game. But in the off season, I usually go T-work, front flips, overhand flips, and then usually either curveball machine or velo machine, just to work on my timing and rhythm.
I would imagine playing college baseball, making the adjustment to professional baseball, and then eventually to the big leagues, there's a huge learning curve, and there's a list of adjustments that need to be made. For the first time, you're facing guys who are obviously throwing a little bit harder, who can locate their secondary pitches, and who also can pitch backwards. What would you say was the biggest adjustment that you've had to make as a professional baseball player playing on a daily basis, competing against some of the best pitchers in the world?
I'd probably say not trying to go up there and hit 3 different pitches. I mean, right. Throughout my career, I mean, guys aren't throwing all that hard, so you're able to adjust to the speeds. I mean, you can be on time for the fastball, but easily stay back on that curveball. But the higher you go in baseball, I mean, you got no chance if you're up there doing that.
Right.
So I started really hunting that fastball and not trying to hit all 3, 4, 5 pitches,
mm-hmm.
that's when everything really, that's when my career kind of took a turn.
Right.
And then other than that, I mean, playing 142 games a year, that's when I really started focusing on my body and keeping that in shape throughout the year.
Yeah.
So then it's the most baseball I've ever played, so.
Yeah.
I got a handle on it now, but first couple years is definitely an adjustment. But I feel like now that I have my routine down.
Best piece of advice. What's the best piece of advice that someone has given you that's had a huge impact on your game, whether it's a coach, teammate, a parent, family member, friend?
From one of my early coaches said, just go out there and play as hard as you can every single day.
Yeah.
I mean, for me personally, I'm going to go out there and play as hard as I possibly can, try to get every ounce of ability I can out of the talent that I have. I mean, I'm not the strongest, I'm not the fastest, I don't have the most power, but I'm going to get every drop of that as I can and see where it takes me.
Yeah, getting every drop, every ounce of the talent that you have. You know, and that's the interesting thing about that is, like, that is literally an intention that you do have to set. And there's so many distractions. You have the expectations of the coach. You have people in the stands. You have an umpire who can sometimes suck, right? And if you're in high school, maybe you got guys watching you play. It's really hard. It's really easy, to forget that really your job is to go out there and compete your tail off and to really, like you said, get every ounce of ability out of your natural abilities.
I mean, I can go out there and win or lose, as long as I played as hard as I possibly could that day, I can look back and say that I did it right.
Yeah.
I can say that day was successful.
Favorite player growing up?
I'd probably have to say Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, growing up here in Seattle, going to the old Kingdom. Yeah, that was, he was definitely my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a fun guy to watch, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, last question. If you could just give one piece of advice to the Quality at Bat members, subscribers, fans, what would that one piece of advice be?
I'd probably say play as hard as you possibly can for as long as you possibly can.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to come across guys who have better tools. They're faster, they're stronger. But as long as you play harder than them, you're going to keep getting a chance to play.
That's so true. I'm gonna need any more of an example than a guy like Altuve. I mean, you know, signed as a free agent, didn't get drafted. I mean, not a big guy. He's strong, but he's not big, and he's probably gonna be a Hall of Famer. I mean, it's very rare that you see something like that. But I mean, he's a good example.
He definitely knows how to play this game.
Yeah, yeah. It's been really fun watching him compete the past week. Well, Ian, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your time. I really appreciate you talking about your process, what it was like, you know, making the adjustments from Little League, high school, to college, to professional, to the big leagues. I mean, I can only imagine how much of a, you know, everything that you've gone through and all the lessons that you've learned. So again, I really appreciate it, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, no problem. Thank you very much. All right.